The reality for many of you is that investment properties where you live have become absolutely unaffordable. The good news is that there are many cities with affordable properties and many of those under 100K. If you're someone who's ready to buy your first out-of-state property in the next 4 months, then I encourage you to check out my free training that'll break down the process and show you exactly what it takes to invest out of state. I purchased properties out of state and it's changed my life. The same is possible for you. You simply need the right information. My free training will help you take that next step towards buying your first out-of-state property. You can watch the training right now at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode. Again, you can find it at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode.
Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second?
Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue, and the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors.
If you're someone who lives in an area where it's so expensive to buy real estate and you feel like it's impossible, then I have something for you. I just released a free guide that's going to give you the 8 steps you need to take to buy your first out-of-state property. I've bought several properties out of state, living in California, investing in Ohio, and you can do the same. It's just a matter of having the right information. So click the link in the description of this episode to get your free guide today.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast, episode 177. A few quick announcements before we get into this week's episode. If you haven't already, take a moment to leave us a 5-star rating and review. You can pause this episode and do that really quick. It'll take less than 30 seconds, and it helps us to spread this message all over the world and get in front of more people. If you do leave a 5-star rating and review, send me a screenshot of your submission. My email is in the show notes, and I'll reply by sending you a free training on how to find and evaluate properties. So if you're someone just starting out, you're not sure how to calculate cash flow, how to look for properties, and just how to do some of those basic things to understand if a property is going to be profitable, then I definitely encourage you to leave that review so I can send you that training. A couple other announcements. If you are in the DC area, I want to see you this Saturday, July 8th for the Generational Wealth Expo. It's going to be an amazing opportunity to learn about real estate, hear from different speakers about personal finance, and so much more. If you can't make it in person, there's actually going to be a streaming option. And so the link is in the show notes. I would love to see you there either virtually or in person in DC again this Saturday, July 8th. I hope I see you there. Also, if you're not aware, I've started a coaching program for those who are looking to buy their first out-of-state property. We just had our first coaching call yesterday, and it was really, really great. We spoke about side hustles. We spoke about looking at certain markets and just learning how to navigate finding the city that you want to invest in. And so there are group coaching calls every week, and you have access to an updated version of my out-of-state course. And really the goal is to help you throughout the process. So in the beginning, in the middle, and after you purchase your first out-of-state property. So if you're interested in applying for this coaching program, go to outofstatemoney.com or click the link below in the show notes. I'm so excited about this episode today. This is part 2 with Paige Turner, the star of HGTV's Fix My Flip. Just wrapped up another wonderful season. This was an amazing conversation, and we really got into a whole lot of great information. And so without further ado, let's get into it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. If you haven't already, if you're on the audio side, please take a moment, pause this episode, leave us a 5-star rating and review. It helps us out a lot, and I look forward to hearing from you. If you are on YouTube, make sure you like this video, subscribe, and share with a friend. I'm so excited about this interview today. Here with me today, I have Miss Paige Turner. Paige, thank you so much for joining the show. I really appreciate it.
Well, Sam, thank you for having me back in person.
Yep.
Like we see each other on Instagram.
Yep.
You interviewed me last year on Zoom.
Yep. Yep.
And now we're in person.
Yep.
I love that. Keep growing, my friend.
Thank you.
That's awesome.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So I know you've been up to a whole lot over the past year. But before we get into that, for those who maybe have not heard of you and maybe are under a rock somewhere, let them know who you are.
Well, I'm Paige Turner, and I have been a licensed real estate broker for almost 20 years.
Wow.
And I've been flipping for about 10. This is my second show on HGTV. It's called Fix My Flip. You know, we come on prime time. 9 o'clock, 8 o'clock Central. And mom, single mom, three kids. I mean, real estate has fed me for 20 years full time amongst other streams. But real estate has been my sister girl. Like, she's the one that saw me. You made sure I put three of my girls through private school, all graduate them from college on time, you know, and really has given me a quite beautiful life.
Definitely. That's amazing. So let's start with the show. You know, the show is amazing. You know, I've enjoyed it. I was watching a recent episode, and if y'all haven't checked it out, make sure you check it out for sure. Amazing show. I enjoyed last season. I'm enjoying this season. And one of the things people always say is like, is this stuff actually real? You know, that's a question. That's something people always say. People feel like the show's not real. So tell us, like, about Fix My Flip.
Well, you know, there's some things that have to be TV magic just because mm-hmm. it is on television. But this is one thing I'll tell anybody who's watching out there. One thing I don't have is a good poker face. So I'm not an actor. You know, I've never been to acting school. I didn't audition for this show. I created the show with my partner and my manager, Freddie Bell. And I pitched the show and both of the last two TV shows I've been on. And so I'm not an actor. I just write emails and create shows. And I say, this is what I want to do. And people say, okay, give me a green light. But if you watch my face, my facial expressions will tell the story. My facial expressions cannot be made up. So I would say, minus the TV magic we have to massage, mm-hmm. probably 92% of my show is completely real.
Definitely. Appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah.
And I think it's important for people to know. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, some of the massage and stuff like that, but I've seen the show and I'm very observant. It seems very authentic to me. And I think what I appreciate about it too is you get to see like real reactions from mm-hmm. people, like, you know, before, during, after.
Right,
like
right.
It's very authentic. Just seeing people's perceptions and the challenges and all those things. So,
you know what I see on Fix My Flip, Sam? I see humans human. Mm-hmm. You know, when they call me in, it's real deal. They call me in to help them. They're really in a fix, in a bind, whether mm-hmm. it's financially or maybe they have the money. They just don't know what to do with the layout of the house or positioning the property for the market. Mm-hmm. You know, they just get stuck, right? So that's real. They do call me in. But what I don't know is going to happen is when I knock on that door, I make sure, because I am an executive producer on the show, that I don't meet the flippers until the first day of filming. So literally, I might see them before we say action, but it's just a quick, hey, how are you? Thanks for having me. And that's it. Mm-hmm. You know, so I really want it to be as authentic as possible. And I don't know what's going to meet me on the other side of this door. You know, is it going to be somebody humble? You know, I think it's really honorable for somebody to say, especially as an adult, you know, hey, I'm kind of stuck in a bind in this flip. Mm-hmm. Can you help me? It takes a lot of humility to ask for help. So I honor that and I respect that. But sometimes on the other side of that door, I met with an ego. Like, I mean, I didn't want you here. My partner did. Like, and that's what we see on Fix My Flip, especially in season two.
Yeah.
And part of the reality of being in real estate and of being on television and trying to have this duality of both is that I think the episode last week where it was a young lady who answered the door in a beautiful black cocktail dress. And I was like, okay, this will be fun. And reality was, at the end or halfway through that episode, she tells me that she doesn't have any intention on finishing the house for another 6 to 7 months. And I went, what? Well, then why am I here? And that was all real conversation. Like, why did you call me and my crew here, Paige Turner, to help you as my real business? But then my crew is my secondary business and a television show that costs a lot of money to produce to come here. And that's why we had to make the B story to our brothers, you know, who showed back up for us, who really needed help on their second house as well. They were like, we would love some more help. That was Ken and Reggie. But that was a real situation where on the television side, we were like, well, we only have so much to pay for to produce one episode.
Right.
And now this lady's telling us that she doesn't want to finish her house for 6 or 7 months. Well, we only have maybe 4 months to finish these episodes.
Right.
So we had to find that B story. You know, so that's the real reality. You know, in flipping, sometimes you get stuck and you may or may not get done and becomes a total flop. And then on the television side as well, like, we have to finish this episode. We can't lose this whole episode because this lady, by the time she got finished with the house, we were already airing the show.
Yeah. That's wow.
So you have to pivot. You have to pivot in real estate. You have to pivot in television. So having both of those hats on, whew, that's reality.
Absolutely. Something else that came to mind, everybody wants to flip properties, you know, it's the cool thing to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously there's money that can be made and things mm-hmm. of that nature. From your perspective, what are some things that aspiring flippers overlook about the reality of what it's like?
Well, that it's quick, easy money. And that it only takes 30 days or maybe 60 minutes, like you see on TV, right? To flip a house. And we both know that is not true. You know, we both know that there's no easy flip. We both know that, you know, even in what seems to be a cosmetic flip can sometimes turn out to be the worst financial decisions, because like one of the flippers on the show, they didn't get an inspection and they didn't know that they had a septic tank instead of a sewer. And we did not find that out until real time while I was filming. Nobody knew. Wow. And I said, what are they doing outside? Like real time on camera. And they were like, oh, we just found out there's a septic tank and it might be cracked. And I went, what? How did you guys didn't get an inspection? Oh, you bought it sight unseen. Oh, it was during that crazy time in the market where you were just buying anything you could, which I wasn't doing that. And I'm still financially solvent right now. You know, a lot of people got stuck doing that because when the market shifted, it was like, uh-oh, what do we do now? So, you know, there's errors all over the place, you know, thinking that it's quick money, first of all. Second of all, I tell people, thinking that it's a hustle and a game. I want to get in the real estate game. Okay, well, it's definitely not a game. And if you're playing it like a game, you're going to lose, right? I run each one of my flips as a business. An individual business. I have my flipping business and then I have the homes. You know, you have to look at each one of them because one can literally put the next three and just tank the next three. Also, thinking their home is worth more than it is in a changing market. You know, I almost got doing that a year and a half ago because I saw that there was a curve coming, but I was not quite in reality that my flip was not worth what it was 20 days prior. And so I had to say, well, you know what? I'd rather lose $50,000 now than $150,000 because it's still money to be made, you know, but we kind of get greedy as flippers the last 5 years because it's almost like too much money was being made, you know? And then those flippers now, they don't know how to massage that out and sell property in a balanced market.
Definitely.
So
definitely.
I gave you a whole lot of reasons, you know, why flippers think it's, you know, so easy and, you know, a easy money maker, and it's not.
Definitely. Something that you mentioned that I want to talk a bit more about is setting realistic expectations for what something could sell for. Something that we spoke about last week was when we were on the phone was just that people don't know how to properly price or sell their property. So can you talk a bit more about that? And just like, how can someone who is in the flipping business like be realistic with what their outcome is and what it could actually sell for and not just what you feel it could sell for?
Well, you start with a comp or a comparative market analysis, which is just basically figuring out what are homes going for in your immediate market. You know, if you don't know how to do that, then you should certainly team up with a licensed real estate agent or broker that will help you not just know what's going on in your market, but nowadays you have to stay abreast with what's going on. Like week to week, I'm checking the markets that I have properties in because that's literally as interest rates go up and they spike and then they come down a little bit and then all of the manic that goes out with we're in a housing crash, you know, it's like, you know, everything keeps changing. And so I would say that first is to know your immediate market, like literally within 2 to 3, no more than 5 miles of your immediate market, what's going on there so that you can know, one, what properties are being listed for, which is good to know because that like gives you the marketing advantage. You know, what's the average of homes going for sale? But then what really matters is what has closed in the last, I used to say, Sam, like 3 to 6 months, but now I say 30 days.
Wow.
Like what's closing in the last 30 to 60 days? Because that's the real value of homes in the area. Because when they're on the market, and even if they're under contract, we don't know what they're going to close for. Because you can list for one price and then sell way above, sell way under, or sell for list price. Yeah. So you really want to look at those closed properties.
Definitely, definitely. Something else that I was thinking about is a lot of people obviously want to make their home, their flip, you know, beautiful finishes and everything to be just immaculate.
Yeah.
What are some areas that you see flippers wasting a lot of money, like where they could maybe save money on X, Y, and Z instead of going all out and buying the most expensive thing
and blowing the budget? Well, they should make their home and their flip beautiful. It's their brand. Mm-hmm. They should make it at least look and feel like a custom home, especially now because homes aren't selling themselves anymore, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, that same old safe black, white, beige, black, white, gray, black, white, you know, the same neutral colors. Buyers are smart. you know, they're savvy. They usually find a house before they find an agent because everything's right at their fingertips online and right. all these apps that we have. And, you know, you have to, again, going back to not only knowing the numbers in the market. So when I do a comp, the comparative mm-hmm. market analysis, I look at the numbers, but then I also look at the pictures. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I might even have to drive by if that doesn't convince me to see what upgrades are in a house. Mm-hmm. Because if you're doing maximum upgrades in your flip in an area that aren't requiring that many, now you're completely over renovating the house and then you're not going to see the return that you could see. But that doesn't mean to skimp and make your flip less than what it should be. You just have to find more creative ways to have that custom look and feel, but not spend as much as other homes in other areas.
Definitely, definitely. That makes a lot of sense. Speaking of like interest rates and costs going up, I mean, inflation has been crazy over the past couple of years. And I've heard a lot of people talking about materials are more expensive mm-hmm. and things just seem kind of tight.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on what's changed over the last couple of years?
Well, my thought initially was that, well, eggs have gone up, milk has gone up, cars went up, right? I mean, clothes went up, you know, everything has gone up. So naturally the housing market would feel that too. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that the housing market will stop. Because I was in the real crash of 2007, you know, that lasted for 10 years mm-hmm. and made it through and made millions of dollars. You know, I had to find a different way to sell real estate. It wasn't traditional and it was very hard. But, you know, mm-hmm. once I found that niche and I was able to capitalize on it, you know, I just went for it. But, you know, the thing with inflation is that it goes back to knowing your market, mm-hmm. understanding that because houses aren't selling themselves anymore, you have to put some effort into the house to sell it. That's called marketing. Most agents and flippers don't know about, you know, what a marketing plan is for the house and how you're going to position the house. And, you know, just making sure, Sam, that the property makes sense mm-hmm. before you even close on it. You know, you can't do this sight unseen anymore.
Yeah.
You know, you shouldn't anyway, you know. And just, you have to know your craft now.
Yeah.
And so inflation, it comes with the territory. It, you know, you just have to be more wise with the pennies. What do the young kids say, the coins that we're spending? You have to just be more wise with them.
Definitely, definitely. As far as like a marketing plan, what's typically your approach?
Well, you know, that's interesting because a lot of it's old school now.
Yeah.
You know, my approach isn't only staying on Insta and TikTok, you know, where you can get a lot of misinformation. You know, that's why mm-hmm. so many people think it's so easy when a lot of people flip homes that don't even own their own home, you know, mm-hmm. so they're flipping homes that are their biggest investment to date mm-hmm. based off of what a .com is telling them to do because it looks so easy and then they get stuck, you know. So marketing has to go past, you know, being the best in, well, even if it's in your own mind, influencer on Instagram, it really has to go into going back to open houses, broker caravans, you know, sending out. I tell new agents especially, don't discount the mail carriers. You know, people still get mail, mm-hmm. right? And so if you can become that trusted confidant, you know, real estate or flipping, you know, expert in your area, then send that neighborhood that you want to farm some type of reach out like every 4 to 6 weeks like clockwork. And you might not get a return on in the first 4 weeks, but 3 months down the line, 6 months down the line, when they know that, you know what, he or she always turns up in my mailbox with good information. And what's that good information? People want to know, what is their home worth? Mm-hmm. You know, what's going on in their immediate market? Ooh, such and such neighbor just sold their house for that much money or that little money. They want to know,
you
know, so that goes back to old school marketing. Shaking hands and kissing babies, going to gatherings again. You know, we're outside again, right? Yep. So you have to find the real estate meetups, you know, and go meet people again and really get your name out there. I always tell people, I shake hands and I kiss babies in real life. You know, you have to be the best outside of our social media platforms.
I'm really glad you mentioned that because we're just in an age right now, obviously the digital revolution or whatever you want to call it. We're in an age right now where people feel like you can just build your real estate business, build your business behind your phone or behind your laptop. And to me, it feels like a lot of missed opportunity and it's kind of lazy, really. Like, especially if you're out here trying to flip or be a real estate agent, broker, all these things, like it's a contact sport. Yeah. Like, you know, you need to get out there and reach people. Yeah. Like, you know,
I agree. And I would dare not to being able to proudly say that I've been a licensed real estate broker in 3 states for 20 years straight. Right. I would say that it's very risky to take a chance on your algorithm in Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, or Twitter, because if you want to keep your same 39 tweets from being seen and think that's how you're going to build your career and make it lasting and full time and give you a life that real estate can yield to you, you know, real estate will give to you what you put in, you know, and it has to be more than 2 or 3 hours making a couple of reels on TikTok. You know, it has to be outside with meeting people, you know, and the contact sport. That's the only way to last. You know, you have to go to, you know, shindigs again. You know, you have to show up at office parties again. And it's a different market. You know, I said it, I'll keep saying it, you know, houses don't sell themselves anymore. Yeah. So we sell them, you know, we make the deals like human beings, not AIs, not, you know, your algorithm. Human beings are making those deals.
Definitely. When you mentioned the algorithm, it made me think of something. So you could have someone put up a beautiful reel and it can reach hundreds of thousands of people. There's no guarantee it's going to reach your target audience. Whereas you can go to your point, you can go to the local real estate meetup and you might meet somebody who you could partner with. You might meet somebody who could be on your team. Yeah. You might meet a future client.
You meet money in person.
Yeah.
You meet pocketbooks. You meet bank accounts. You meet lines of credit. You meet the people who say yes to giving you a loan on your first deal. You don't meet that in the algorithm. You know, you see people who, you know, I always say, you know, people will always say, I'm going to flip. And 9 times out of 10 in their whole lifetime, they'll never do it because it's such a risk. And I think that when that reality hits a person who can get outside of Instagram or, you know, I know I'm giving them all a hard time, but, you know, get outside of social media, you know, they realize, wait a minute, this is real life. You want me to sign my name on what? Oh my God. You know what I'm saying? And then that's when real life kicks in, right? So it's real life real estate right now.
Yeah, definitely. So some people are a little bit shy and, you know, all right, I heard this episode, I go to the real estate meetup. What am I supposed to say? How am I supposed to talk to people? What's a couple of tips you have to kind of for somebody to break the ice and just learn how to build relationships in person who's been behind Instagram or their MacBook for the last 3 years?
That's hard. You know, I'm such a social butterfly. I'm like, I don't meet a stranger. So, you know, but this is what I would do. I would be honest. So you want to do a little role play?
Let's do it.
Okay. So I'll be the shy one. Okay. Right. So you're me. You know, I walk in like, hi, everybody, right? Okay, so you're me. And you're like saying hi to everybody. I'm like, hey, you know, hi, Sam, I'm Paige.
Hey, Paige, what do you do? What brought you here today?
Can I be honest with you?
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm doing. And I am very interested in this business and I want to get in it. So I just thought I'd come out and say hi, but I don't even know what to do right now. Yeah. I'm really scared.
Yeah, it's all right. Well, you know, we're here just having a good time and to help people like you get into the industry and learn more. So thank you for letting me know that. I appreciate your transparency. What are some things about the business that interests you? Is there anything that you saw that might be interesting?
See, and that's just how it is, right? Yeah. Because who doesn't want to help a damsel in distress? You know, male or female, you know what I'm saying? Like, people want to help. And if you're hosting this meetup or if you're a leader in the meetup, we're looking for people like, oh my gosh, she'd be great. Number one, maybe she'll intern for me because she wants to learn the business, right? Yep. And that's something else you can offer. Like, I don't know anything, but I'm willing to just be your shadow. And if you need coffee, I'll just get you coffee. Like, I just want to come up to your office and just sit with you on Saturdays. Yeah. If you need phone calls, if you need me to drive by properties, like, you know, so you can offer your service like that, you know. And I feel that anybody getting this business should have a mentor who has successfully completed many flips in their lives and has made this a business before they even sign their name on any dotted line. You know, find somebody who's real life in your immediate area where you can go to these meetups and offer your help to. Right. And that's the best way. Like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I will answer your phones. You know, I will even run your Instagram for you. You know, find that exchange of service. The Bible says that a laborer is worthy of his or her hire. So it means that if you're giving me information, I should be paying you for it, you know, because you spent years and a ton of money in experience and cash, you know, a ton of time learning your craft. So I should be paying. It's not free. Yeah. Right. So I should be able to give you a service of sorts to learn from you. Even if that's paying $25 to come in and sit in your meetup, you know, it's just that exchange saying that you're worth this. And you're saying back that if you want my time, then you have to make it worth my time. And you should be your biggest investment. You have to invest in yourself.
Definitely. Definitely. I love that. I love that. And I think, you know, what we did, little role play, it helps. And there's plenty of places and websites and so forth where people can find
meetups
in every city.
When I started in Nashville, there was one, oh my goodness, it might have been 10 people when I started. It was a Nashville investors group. Mm-hmm. Might have been 10 of us. And when I left Nashville, there might have been 100 people.
Wow.
100 people who were going to those meetups. I've seen it happen out here in LA too.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, one of my flippers from season one, they started a meetup because everybody thinks they're a star if they leave Fix My Flip, which I love. You know, they turn into these like sensations on Instagram.
Yeah.
And they started their meetups with like 20 people. And now literally 100 people go to their meetups.
Wow.
I'm just like, wow, you guys did that.
Yeah.
And now look at what that means. That means that they have 100 people they can call to partner with, to raise capital with, to get help from. I mean, they've created their own sphere of influence and their own network.
Yeah.
Just by saying, hey, come on, come one, come all. And then that shy person, like, I don't know what to do. I just need help. And I'm here to help you if you can help me. And then I promise you, someone will say, absolutely, I need help. I know I need help right now, you know? And that one person says, I'll intern for you. I would probably say, sure, no problem.
Yeah. What do you need help with?
I need help with social media. I need help with some writing. And then on the TV side, I need help with decks. I need help. Mm-hmm. I mean, flushing out ideas that Freddie and I come up with. It's all over the place,
yeah.
You know? So people who you think don't need that help really do. And good help Definitely. Is hard to find, you know? So it works really both ways.
Definitely. Well, you heard it here first. What Paige needs.
That was good, Sam.
One thing you talked about, Paige, is mentorship. And yeah. It's I've seen a lot online. I've seen a whole lot. And it seems like people are having a hard time properly vetting the person who they want to mentor them. And a lot of people have had unfortunate experiences because of that.
Yeah.
What's some advice you can give to someone who is looking for a mentor? I mean, obviously it's hard to find everything out about someone, but what are there any ways that someone could do some just initial due diligence to just get a sense of if this is a good person to work with as a mentor?
Well, I think it's hard online, especially because, you know, see, I haven't launched my mentorship program yet because I don't want to be a hustle. Like, I don't want to be, come learn from me for, well, it wouldn't be $99.99. It would be like $900,000. I'm just kidding. It would be much more than that. But I really want to make sure that people are going to gain and get something from it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I might just have to make it like, you're going to get basic tools here, but I'm going to show you how to go and in your immediate neighborhood, you know, and find that mentor, which goes back to going to meetups. You know, it goes right back to that. You have to find somebody in your area, boots on the ground.
Yeah.
Because what I could teach you in LA's a completely different beast of a market than anywhere else between here and New York. Mm-hmm. New York and California, completely different, you know, and the hardest markets to do anything in any industry, you know. So, but finding somebody who's right there that knows your smaller town in the middle of Alabama where you can actually go and shadow them. I mean, that goes back to just going to your meetups. And that's how you can vet the best mentor. I mean, a mentor used to be outside of being online, you know, and paying, you know, $1,900 to, like, I love Tony Robbins and I've given that man more money. I've given him a lot of money and I've gone to see him several times in person, but I also watch him online. But I'll tell you what, there's something completely different when you have somebody's attention in person and it's one-on-one like this. So just find that person in your neighborhood.
Yeah. And I like that you mentioned that too, because going to those meetups, you can build rapport. You can really like get to know somebody a bit better and build some trust.
Yeah.
And to your point, you know, perhaps support them and just kind of like organically build a relationship. Whereas in some cases online, I can see how some people might feel it's just transactional. It's like, well, I don't really know this person. I don't really know their story. I don't really know. I haven't really gotten a feel for them. So I appreciate.
Yeah.
And again, just emphasizing the importance of like getting back out there, getting back out in person and connecting with people.
And I'm not opposed to any online mentors.
Yeah.
Because I'll be one of them. You know, people, I have hundreds hundreds, Sam, hundreds of people in my DM saying, please, can I sign up? So I'm going to create something, but I'm not going to discount and I'm not going to not encourage people to like do say what I'm doing now. Find somebody that's a real person in your area, because I'm not gonna be able to go and talk and touch everybody. It's impossible, right? But I do want people to learn from me. I'm just trying to find the most authentic way possible that I can without it being too guru-ish.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because I'm super real. I'm really transparent. Yeah. You know, I tell people my full story. It's a crazy hot mess. It wasn't always, like I said, I made millions of dollars during the real recession, you know, of 2007 when that housing market crashed. But, you know, with that, I also filed bankruptcy. I had to give back my brand new Escalade to save my house that I was raising my three daughters in. You know, it was a lot going on in real estate. And I had my real estate license for about 4 years. I just opened my brokerage. I went from 50 agents to 5. You know, it was horrific, a horrific time, you know. And I want people to know that part, you know, and sometimes you don't find that part out just, you know, being this guru online because everything is perfect. And it's not, it's still not. I have a TV show and it's not perfect, you know, because real estate is real life happens in real estate.
Definitely. And I mean, I appreciate your transparency for sure. And I know people value that. And
thank you.
I think the intention that you have with wanting to help other people, it'll go just fine because, you know, you're coming from it with a good intention and you want people to get something out of it. So I'm sure whenever it launches, it'll be amazing.
Thank you, Sam. I appreciate
it. Of course. So, I mean, you've been in the business for a very long time. And with that comes a lot of lessons. What are some things you would do differently when you look back to 10 years ago, 20 years ago? What are some things you would do differently?
We make a lot of money. Forget flipping. Let's just talk about being, you know, real estate agents first. Mm-hmm. We make a lot of money selling real estate. I wish I would have saved more. I wish I would have set up my real estate business earlier as a business because, you know, we're not W-2'd as realtors or as flippers. We're 1099'd. Yeah. And instead of getting paid as an individual, I should have been getting paid through my corporation so that my corporation could have paid me. And I would have ran taxes through ADP right out of that. You know, I've owed a lot. I've had a tax lien. You know, I was like, oh, how much money? I have to pay taxes every quarter. This is years ago. But, you know, part of my transparency, nobody taught me that. Mm-hmm. We're not always taught. You know, I had a great mother growing up. My dad died when I was 8, but I had a great mother growing up. But she didn't know about credit. She didn't know about LLCs, you know, tax brackets. She didn't know about, you know, tax coverings. She didn't know about any of that, you know. And I had to figure it out all on my own, basically through trial and error. That's it. You know, I wish that I would have, instead of buying my first house as a single family home, I wish I would have house hacked. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked about house hacking before. I wish I would have bought a duplex, triplex, or a quad, lived in one unit, and then allowed the other units to pay my mortgage plus some, you know, and then I would have used that as leverage and an asset to go get my second loan. And I would have bought another triplex and I would have owned hundreds of them by now, you know, but I wasn't taught that. So I mean, a lot, so much, you know, I wish that I would have been taught, well, I didn't even have a mentor, really how to run my brokerage better, you know, and sometimes buying into franchise isn't so bad because they have the structure where when you're independent brokerage, which I was for 16 years and a top black female owned brokerage, woman owned brokerage in Nashville. I'm so proud of that, that we lasted for 16 years.
Wow.
But boy. Gosh, dog it. I could have done things a lot differently that would have made me more money and given me more time and rest.
Yeah.
You know, because we are, as people of color, as a woman-owned business, you know, I didn't know about a lot of the different programs, like small business programs I could have had. But even in that, like either I made too much or I didn't make enough, you know, I didn't have the roadmap in time. Now I have the roadmaps, you know, now I figured it all out, but I wish I would have known it starting out or at least in the first few years. But when I started, Sam, I didn't have Google, you know, I couldn't do my .com searches, you know, I had to go to the library, you know, and then, you know, it wasn't too much help back then. So, yeah, those are a few of the things I would have changed.
Definitely. There's one thing you mentioned that we haven't actually discussed on the show. You mentioned buying into a franchise for a brokerage versus doing it independently. Can you talk about that a little bit more?
Yeah. So as an independent, you know, you're going to get hate mail on both sides of this and I'm here for it because I lived it. Okay. So as an independent brokerage, which just meant I owned it 100% out myself. So proud of that. There's a lot of competition that goes into that. You know, you attract other realtors based off of what you can offer. So it's not always what you can offer with your commission split, which is where the brokerage makes a lot of their money. It's also what you can offer an agent as far as education goes, marketing goes, promotion goes, and that costs a lot of money. Mm. Then it costs a lot of money to have your system set up. So, you know, starting with business cards, you know, like what is that process, moving all the way up into websites and maintaining those websites and running those websites. And that's costly. And when you can't compete with the big box franchise brokerages, that means that with me, I had to offer more for the agent to make and less for me as a brokerage to make with their commission split, you know, because they wanted to be with me. They wanted to, you know, have my know-how. They wanted to be next to a ballin' woman. You know, they wanted to be next to just a Black woman who's doing things in real estate. Mm-hmm. And so I could go and catch the fish, but now I have to keep them. And so now, because I'm offering them a higher split and my brokerage is taking less, I have to figure out, okay, how am I going to, you know, make sure that they have what they need as agents, and I'm spending, which means my profit is decreasing on my brokerage side, which means now I'm still a competing agent as a broker.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're a full-time managing broker, you should be managing your people and increasing them. But I had to eat too. So that means that I'm always the top agent because I'm going to be the best, you know, wherever I am. Yeah. So I got to a point where I was burned out. And I was tired of managing people because I'm a self-starter. And I think out of every brokerage, if you have 100 or 10, maybe 10 to 20%, you know, produce full-time income for that brokerage. Mm-hmm. So if I have 50 people, I'm really only depending on maybe five to cover the needs of the brokerage. And that was just hard. And so I closed my brokerage and I went to a franchise. And I have found great peace. I will never own another brokerage again. Because I could not compete. I was not willing to put the money in to compete.
Yeah.
I realized that I didn't want to become a franchise where I had to sell them. I just didn't want to do it. So for me, it didn't work out. And then you have the franchise side where as a franchise owner, you know, you buy in and it's expensive, but you have all their systems.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm still a Black owned business. I'm just a Black owned, probably white franchise owned business. Yeah. Right. So I waited a long time to get out of owning my brokerage independently because of pride, you know, and I was losing money left and right. And it was hard for me to compete. I mean, I still did well. Don't get me wrong. You know, but I'm talking about on the next level platform.
Yeah.
I'm talking about where the millions and millions of dollars being generated are. You know, not just me making the money, but my agents and my brokerage making the money, where somebody would come in and say, hey, I want to buy a franchise. And then I could have started planting. But again, with that, I didn't have a mentor to show me how to do that either.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, I'm not going through another 20 years of learning this. So I shut her down, and it's a very proud space for me, but those days are gone.
Definitely. And one thing you mentioned too is just managing people. So you had at a certain time at least 50 or so agents, and you mentioned probably five or so are really bringing in the money.
Yeah.
What did you learn from like managing people?
Because people don't want to work.
I say that all the time. I literally say that all the time.
They don't want to do the work. You know, my hashtag, I look back on Facebook from 15 years ago. My hashtag has been do the work. I actually had somebody say to me, you know, wow, if you can do this, I want my own show too. And I looked at them. I was like, really? You know, how'd you get this? Like, you know, it was so passive. Like, how'd you get this? It was a little bit more of an attitude instead of an accolade. You know what I'm saying? And I went, how'd I get this? I was like, well, you really want me to break that down? Why don't you go ahead and be in this business for 20 years, file bankruptcy, almost lose your house, get a tax lien, have to give back your Escalade, go through the worst depressed market ever for 10 years straight while you're raising three children, and only to say, oh, now I want to try to catch some dreams, and then have to deal with the headache. And we've talked off air about, you know, it's the headaches that I have to deal with being on camera, you know, being on camera, we'll just say. There's a lot that goes with that that's very heavy, especially when I co-created this show, I executive produced the show, and I'm host of this show. So, you know, go through those things. You know, make sure that you have over 1,000 transactions under your belt, you know, and that you actually have the knowledge and the know-how. And then to boot, because you have to stay fit, number one, to live long, and number two, to be on television, you get up and work out at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning because those are your only hours. because you have to come and do great shows like this to promote your show and to promote your business. And you have to go to your real estate office. Go ahead and do all that. And then maybe add on getting up for 3 o'clock prayer because you still want to keep your spirit intact. And that's the only time you can pray corporately with your 6 a.m. church because they're on the East Coast and you're on the West Coast. Go ahead and do it. And I could go on and on. I couldn't believe that question was asked. People don't want to work. So I said, you know what? I realized that at that moment, Sam, what I'm good at. I'm good at coming to instill, uplift, inspire, and give you the tools because there's no secrets in my book. Okay, I'm an open book, literally, page turn, right? Here are the tools how you can be successful. I can give you all the tools. Here. Here's your garden. Here are all your tools. I can't plant for you. I can't be you to get what I have. You got to go get it for yourself. And I realized one day that this is my strength and my gift. It's not to rah-rah the people who don't want to be rah-rah because they don't want to work. They just want to be on my coattail all day. And I jumped out the business. That part of the business. Yeah. Of managing.
Yeah. No, I love that. And that's a hard truth that people don't want to deal with. Like,
yeah.
People want results and don't want to do the work. Like, people want to be a real estate agent, but you don't want to make 50, 100 calls before you get one person who will even talk to you. People want to buy properties, be investors, but people don't want to analyze 70, 80 deals, go through 5, 10 contracts before you get to that one. Like, people really need to understand, you have to work. Like, you can't just sit and expect things to just come to you and look at what other people have and hate on what they have.
Right.
When you're not willing to do the work that they have done for years.
You know what I mean? Do what I do. You put on these tight Louboutins at 7 o'clock at night after you've been up all day to come and do your amazing show through rush hour because you want to pour into somebody who you respect and you support and then be poured back into and be grateful to have an opportunity and a great platform such as this. They don't want to do that. They would rather say, oh, I'm tired. I need to go to bed. I need to watch TV. Okay, you go ahead and do that because Sam and I are going to get up and we're going to do this at 7 o'clock at night when we've been up since 5 o'clock in the morning. Because we respect the grind that this business requires to be successful. And that was for free, ladies and gentlemen.
No, that got me really, really, really excited. But people don't get it. People do not get it. Like you got to put in the work. It's not comfortable. It's not convenient. It's not easy. It just has to get done. That's it.
And my, you know, I'm not saying guys don't cry, but you know, so I won't be gender specific, but I have tears. I have real tears of frustration, most of all in this business, you know, as a woman, as a minority, as an independent contractor, as an entrepreneur. I mean, entrepreneurialism in real estate is set up to fail. You are not set up to win in this business. And that goes either actually beyond gender and even race. You know, it's such a hard business to get into, stay into, and be sustained in, you know, to where you want it to be full time to take care of your family, right? And so, you know, you have to have the strength, the willpower, mentally, physically, that's why I work out so much. Because if my physical's not right, this is going to go to hell. This is going to go to hell. All of it. I'm just going to be jacked up, you know? And so, but you know, it's like a wheel. One spoke leads to the other spoke. You know, it's like now if my mental's not right, if my spirit's not right, if my finances, I have to keep this whole wheel going constantly. And that takes a lot of strength.
Yeah.
A lot of like fortitude, a lot of, now I'm gonna win. Like, you know, because if he and she can do it, I'm going to do what they're doing because success leaves clues. And if they can do it, because Paige told me, if I can do it, so can you. The only difference is that I'm doing it and you're not. You got to get up and do what I do to get what I have.
Definitely. So when you think about someone who has gone to the meetup, they've started to work with their mentor, they're getting the game and you know, they want to kind of go out and start to do their thing. Let's just say this person is a real estate agent. In addition to, you know, getting those mailers out and different things, are there any other things they can do to set themselves apart in a crowded market? So let's just say, for example, you're here in LA or you're in New York where every other person is probably a real estate agent. Like, how can I set myself apart and start to, over time, break away a little bit from the crowd?
There's as many actors in LA as there are real estate agents now, and flippers too. Everybody's a flipper, everybody's a realtor, everybody's an actor. I would say, you know, you know, there's no need to recreate a wheel. You know, if you do your market research or what works in your field in real estate, in flipping, this is the key to that: consistency. The key is being consistent. You can't just have these one-offs. You do it once every 6 months. Because I think marketing, oh, my numbers are skewed now. When I, back in my marketing days, I think it was like, it takes, okay, my numbers are really bad, but let's just say 7,000 or 700 impressions for somebody to remember something from a billboard, you know? So just imagine that in a mailer, in a phone call, in a meetup, you have to be consistent and become the expert in your area. And the only way that's going to happen, you don't become an expert overnight. You don't become an expert because one reel got a million views. Because I guarantee you, your next reel's only got 100. Because the algorithms are so skewed and so jacked up. They have people thinking they're experts when they're not, you know? And so consistency, whatever your lane of marketing is, you know, whether it's through your sphere of influence, you know, your mailing campaign, door knocking, calling, whatever it is, it could be all of that. It just has to be consistent so that people will remember, hey, you know what? I've been seeing her with these mailers for a year. Let me give her a call. And it might take that. Yeah. You know, but just consistency across the board.
Definitely. And I like that you mentioned someone might call you after a year, right?
It happens to me. Like,
I think it's important for people to understand that, like, you know, you could be pursuing something and your big break, if you will, could happen a year or two down the line of continuing to, and imagine how many people have given up throughout the course of that, you know. To your point, the consistent person will outlast them and get to the goal.
I remember I learned that from a woman who did not teach it to me one-on-one. She taught it to me through a mailing. And she was a top realtor. She's probably 30 years older than me in my neighborhood when I first became a realtor. Her name was Carolyn Adcock. I don't even know if she's still alive. She used to mail out horrific. It was horrific marketing, but it worked. It was a half sheet. Brightly colored fluorescent paper, yellow, green, orange, thick paper.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, people use paper anymore, but you know, thick, like, you know, the, whatever, the flyer paper. And on one side, she had listed, I'm Carolyn Adcock. And she had her little, like, you know, like Home Alone look thing going on. She had her little, you know, whatever her marketing was.
Yeah.
And on the back side was simply what homes have closed for that month in your immediate neighborhood or on the market and have closed. And that was it. And I was a realtor. The information was at my fingertips and I loved getting them. I was like, oh, what's closed? You know, I was like, she does this every month for years. I'm talking about, I lived in that house for 15 years, maybe 16 years. And she never missed a month. So it's expensive to have marketing like that. But if you commit to it, like you commit to buying our fly clothes, driving our cars, you know, we spend more money at Starbucks than we could be putting into our marketing. You know, go and buy a Keurig, go get some vegan whipped cream and you have the same cup of, you know, caramel macchiato, you know, that you would get and probably better and better for you than at Starbucks, and put that money into your marketing. But you have to commit to yourself to stay consistent. And I'll never forget Carolyn Adcock because of that. She probably doesn't even know who I am anymore, but I remember her marketing. That's what I tell people. You have to do that if you want to be the expert in your area. And eventually you will become that one person that people call on, because believe it or not, people think that because there are, you know, realtors are a dime a dozen, let's say, it doesn't mean that there's more, still more people in an area than realtors.
Yeah.
And so they need to know that you're there.
Yeah.
Because one thing is horrible for a realtor or a flipper is to see somebody else's sign go in the yard that's not yours and you live three doors down. Why does that neighbor not know that three doors down is an expert in the neighborhood?
Yeah.
And they went way outside of their, I'm sure they went way outside of their neighborhood to find that agent.
Definitely. Definitely. I love that. And the theme I'm picking up in a lot of the tips that you're sharing is it's important for people to educate their end buyer or their potential customer, whether it's through, you know, what has sold or market trends and things like that. And to your point, just becoming that expert.
Yeah.
And to me, it seems like over time that'll build trust. And when that person is ready to move and say, hey, you know what? I'm ready to sell my house or buy another one.
Yep.
This person has been sending me text or emails or mails,
tips,
or emails, whatever.
That. Yeah.
Like, this is the first person I'm thinking of. Let me call them
yeah.
and see what's going on.
I remember back in the day, I used to mail out calendars And, wow. you know, people would call me based off of the calendars, because every year you would get a calendar, yeah. you know, and just little calendars you put on your refrigerator. Mm-hmm. And I would walk in people's houses for, you know, a listing presentation. I'd be like, oh, there's my calendar. They're like, yeah, I know. That's what we called you. We use your calendar every single day. So, wow. you know, it's useful. And then you give it tips. But that's another way. Let's go back to social media, because it's not all bad. Yeah. You know, another way in marketing, you should be marketing there as well. You know, it's giving people tips. So, mm-hmm. you know, reels are fun and they're cute when you're doing all the voiceovers. But when you can give somebody valuable information, then they're going to start looking to you for more valuable information. Mm-hmm. Then they're going to start DMing you questions. Then I promise you, they're going to say, my grandma has a house to sell on 103rd Street. Can you help us? And you're going to say, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, you know, giving those tips and educating people is an easy way in. And even if you're not an expert, nobody knows you're not an expert but you.
Yep.
So if you're giving out the quality information, then why not label yourself the expert?
Definitely. I love that. I love that. So, you know, what's it been like for your daughters to see you thriving over these past 10, 20 years and just seeing the entire journey and seeing where you're at now? You know, you have your second season of Fix My Flip, and of course you have several other shows you've done too. What do you think the experience has been like for them?
I hope they're proud. The one that lives out here in LA with me, she's definitely riding the wave. She loves it. You know what I'm saying? She's having a ball with it. But my hope is that they're learning from me that, you know, I don't know, y'all's generation is interesting.
Very Tell me about
interesting.
It.
You know, I sometimes I can't read them, but you know, well, one is a lender, so she's following in the real estate footsteps. I did have her get her real estate license a couple of years ago when she first graduated from college, yeah. but she went to the lending side. I was like, that's okay. You know, at least you're still in the business. One's in mm-hmm. IT, so, you know, I don't think she's too interested in real estate.
Yeah.
And the other one is a model. So, yeah. you know, she's interested in real estate if it's her own, you know. But yeah. I think they're proud, you yeah. know. I mean, I hope they are. They tell me they are.
Definitely, definitely, definitely. That's amazing. The one that's a lender, where does she lend?
She's in Maryland.
Okay, cool.
Yep, she's in Maryland.
A lot going on out there.
Yeah, that's what I read. I try to stay abreast of all of the, as many markets as the markets I'm more interested in, you know, yeah. and it surprised me. Like, Florida's in a huge seller's market now. I'm like, mm-hmm. people should be leaving Florida. But
why do you think that?
That's a different show. Okay. Politically, people should be running from Florida, but you know. I don't know. They have a huge inflation going on mm. and like a huge seller's market right now. So does Ohio. Ohio's a really mm. good, you know, has a really good seller's market right mm-hmm. now. I'm like, what? Ohio? Okay, Ohio. You know, where other ones are, you know, trying to simmer and doing weird, you know, circle eights. You know, yeah. everybody's kind of like, what is going on in this real estate market? I stopped trying to predict it.
Yeah, it's been... I think that's a smart thing to do. Just yeah. stop trying yeah. to predict. It's been very weird.
I had another interview a few days ago. They were like, so what are your predictions? I said, only a few fool would make that prediction. I look at interest rates every day. I try to see what's coming around the corner in the next, you know, week, 7 to 30 days.
Yeah.
And I do believe I'm an expert, but I look to other experts as well. And then like today on the, right before I came over here, I was searching for something on Google and an article came up that said, the worst housing crash in history is happening any day. And I was like, what? I was like, but yesterday you just said something completely different. So, you know, I have to pull back from that and just trust my, my trusted sources. Like yeah. I go to Inman, you know what I'm saying? I pay memberships, yeah. you know, I pay these people to tell me, you know, the right information.
Yeah. That makes sense. You said Inman, you got any other resources that people
could
look into?
Oh, just featured me too. Yeah, Inman okay. is great. I don't mind Yahoo Finance. They okay. featured me as well. Yahoo Finance is pretty good. The Real Deal Real Estate, mm-hmm. really good. They just featured me as well. They're cool, all cool. subscriptions. So you have to pay. Yeah. You can't just do a quick Google search to get your information. Yeah. And I like that about those two specific sources. I like The Real Deal because you can either sign up for the whole country or your immediate market or a few markets. You can sign yeah. up for residential or commercial, you yeah. know. So I like them as well. So yeah. I stay close to them.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah, I followed The Real Deal on Instagram. It's like mm-hmm. pretty good information. Yeah, I've kind of like perused their website and stuff. And
yeah.
Yeah, it's good. And to your point, I think those kind of things could help agents, brokers, whoever
yeah.
to become experts in their market because yes. they'll know like what's going on and mm-hmm.
And it's daily.
People.
Yeah. And you can really put out good information.
Yeah.
Instead of relying on a pretty girl and guy on TikTok that shows off how many Lamborghinis they have and how many flips they've closed. And okay, we'll see where you are. You know, I told one of my flippers in season one to fix my flip. Mm-hmm. It was a duo. They were amazing guys. And at the time, they needed help with like, I forgot what era house it was. I forgot. I don't know. I can't remember. But I just remember that after the show, because they became these superstars, you know, they went and bought like 10 properties. And I was like, you guys, you need to unload those. Like, I don't know. Why are you doing this? Because the market is changing. No. Market's hot right now. I said, no, it's not. It's changing. Today it's hot. When these houses are finished in 3 to 6 months, or maybe 9, if you can get your permits through, you're going to be in so much trouble. And wouldn't you know, Sam, just about 6 months ago, I saw them on Instagram saying, hey, if you would like to invest in these properties with us, that's because they're out of money. You don't ask for help if you don't need it.
Yeah.
And I said, I told them they're picking up too much and they didn't listen to PageGP. I said, like, you're just on my show. I'm telling, that's where the real deal comes in. Like off camera, I'm like, you guys have too many properties. You're I don't know what kind of game you're playing, but you are going to crash and burn. And now they're looking for investors to come and help, which I would never. They asked me, I was like, absolutely not. If you guys need my help, like again, then there's no money in this property left.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to say it. If you find somebody at the beginning of a flip who wants to partner with you, cool. But if somebody's in trouble at the end, that might not be the best place to put your money.
Yeah.
That might be a very dangerous place to put your money.
Yeah.
In this market.
Yeah.
Because who knows what's going to happen tomorrow.
Definitely. So they were trying to work on all those flips at once?
They had 10 at one time. Listen, hard money lenders will give you as much money as you want to take because there's no risk for them. Because if I don't pay my note, they're just going to come and take the house. I got it for a good deal. All they're going to do is sell it. So they'll make their money back.
Yeah.
You know, so they'll be first lien on the property. You know, so if they have to foreclose on you, they're good.
Yeah.
But yeah, they picked up all those properties and from hard money loans.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been there. I haven't had 10. I think the most I've had is 5.
Mm-hmm.
And it was rough. And that was a dangerous game I played.
Yeah.
That was years ago. That was a dangerous game I played. And I decided it's not that serious. Yeah. There will be other houses to flip.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. So I'd love to talk a bit more about the show.
Yeah.
And just like what your experience has been over the years, just doing various TV shows, especially Fix My Flip, which you executive produced and host and all those things. What's your experience been as a Black woman in that space on television?
Whoa. Well, you know, it's getting better. Good. I'll say this. When my first show was in Nashville, it was called Flipper Flop Nashville. And there were fewer people of color on the network then. Mm. And I had some challenging times, not so much with not racism, nothing mm-hmm. like that. Nothing from, you know, the corporate level, more when I had to do commercials and stuff. And, you know, I was like, I need my hair. You know, they bring in your hair, makeup people. And those people didn't know how to do black hair, black makeup. I have melasma. You know, my skin looks great, but I have on makeup, you know, because I have melasma, which is just hyperpigmentation. Mm. And that means you have to know how to mix colors well. And it's different when you mix, you know, black and brown skin.
Yeah.
And they would not send people, specifically black people, who knew how to do my hair and my makeup. And so that was a hard curve for me and the network to learn. But I was so proud when they took the initiative and the time to say, Paige, would you like to pick your own hair and makeup people? Because how do you, as a black person, not appear as the angry black woman that always has a problem? You know what I'm saying? You're new on a network where the viewers don't look like you. You know, they don't do all that. And I have to balance that, too, because I'm not on Bravo. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you know, my facial expressions on the show where I'm like, you know, it's like, you know, it'll come out. But I don't pop off on people. And that's not my nature anyway. That's not, I mean, I can do it. But, you know, that's not, I'm still a real estate professional. Yeah. And so I always keep that intact and in mind. But, you know, I was so proud of the network when they said, you know what? This lady shouldn't be doing her hair and makeup because I was looking like Dolly Parton. I was looking crazy, you know, that first season. So it's been hard. It's hard on my side, but I'm grateful that I'm with a network that hears me you know, and does not receive me as this angry Black girl or, you know, too high maintenance. It's like, no, y'all, I'm Black. You need to protect me when I travel because I go into small towns, not even cities, Minden, Louisiana, where I was put in a bed and breakfast. And the owner was proud to say, I don't think he knew I was Black. It was winter. I was super, super white right here, you know, because, you know, Black folk go through different shades of the in the year. Right. And so it was winter times. So I was really pale here. We were still wearing masks. And I had my weave in. It was straight and I had blonde streaks. I don't think he knew I was Black. And he was like, and I had my mask on when I got there. He was like, well, I'm proud to say that you're in the oldest living Confederate's house in the country. He was 100 years old. This house was built 120 years ago. And I was like, the oldest what? Who?
Wow.
In Minden, Louisiana. I said, how many Black people live out here? I didn't see not one but me. And two other people on the crew. So, but that opened the door to a conversation because initially this had nothing to do with the network. This was a production company. They wanted me to rent a car at the airport, like in Lafayette, and then drive an hour and a half, I think it was, to Minden. And my plane landed at like 8 o'clock at night. And I was like, I'm not driving through from nowhere.
Yeah.
In the South, in the deep South. And absolutely not. You know, in 2021, we're all any year. But especially after 2020 and the height of, you know, just racism and what our country's going through. And they didn't understand it at first. The network immediately understood me. And I said, you guys have to protect me. You know, I know I need some white folk to come and pick me up and drive me through this here place. You know, people might not understand that, might get mad at that. Well, I would have done it. Well, that's you. I'm not going to take that chance because I guarantee you, if I have the slightest of error what I'm driving and I'm tired from flying for 4 hours from, you know, the West Coast, and now I got to drive another hour and a half through the forest, you know what I'm saying? I didn't know it was going to be a forest or not, but, you know, just through a really rural area, and I get pulled over, that cop's not going to know that I'm Paige Turner from HGTV. He's not going to give a dang, you know, and I don't have on my glam and my glory, you know, I'm not taking that chance. And so it's been a lot of learning curves like that. Like, you know, I want to go do this work and have representation on this great network. But at the same time, you know, I'm not going to risk my life for it. I have to be protected. I have to feel safe, you know. And if that means that you guys are going to pick me because of that, then shame on you. But that hasn't been the case. So I'm very proud of the network that they listen to me and make sure that I have my needs as a Black woman.
Definitely. Love it. Paige, this is been an amazing interview. It's been great just like catching up and talking about a variety of topics. And, you know, I really do appreciate your transparency and I really respect that about you. And I think it's important for people to see the whole journey. And I'm sure we'll have some folks go back to episode 108 and just see the whole continuum of information. And I just appreciate it. And I know our viewers will get a whole lot out of this episode, and those who are trying to get in the business and do different things that you've been able to do, they'll definitely get a lot of value out of it.
Well, thank you for all of that. I appreciate you acknowledging that, recognizing it, and giving honor to that. And I feel the same toward you. Like,
thank you.
We started off on Zoom last year. Now we're in this beautiful studio right now. I mean, I feel like I'm on like Jay Leno's show. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is amazing. I love this. And so kudos to you.
Thank you.
Black Real Estate Dialogue is needed. You know, continue to go higher and higher and get more. Every single thing you want,
thank you,
you will be able to have. You know, I mean, just in this year, how much you've grown here. So your voice is needed. This platform is needed. And I'm great, very, very grateful that you've extended again to me this opportunity to be here and chit chat.
Definitely.
It's been super fun.
Absolutely. I appreciate that, Paige. Thank you.
Paige,
let people know where they can find you, where they can follow you, where they can check out the show once again, and anything you'd like to leave with the listeners.
Well, you can find me on Instagram. You know, I was talking so bad about social media. Here I am. Well, I think it's very important, you guys, to get out and see people in person again. You know, this is how you continue to grow. You know, you can meet on a Zoom, but there's something spectacular that can happen when you meet in person. But you can find me on Instagram at Paige Turner Unlimited. No I in Paige. P-A-G-E Turner Unlimited. Also, my website is PaigeTurnerUnlimited.com. What else? Fix My Flip comes on every Thursday at 9, 8 Central. Prime time. We love that. And I would tell the listeners, you know, we said it in the middle of the show. Y'all got to do the work. You guys have to get up. You have to do it when it's hard. You have to do it when you're tired. You have to do it when you're crying. You have to do it when people say no. We heard a lot of no's, Sam. And you know what we did? We turned around, we built our own table. And actually, Freddie said, no, we didn't. We built our own foundation. We had to start from the bottom. We had to start with what's going to support our vision and build all the way up. And I was like, that's right. Forget the table. Build your own foundation and just keep going. You know, in a world where what we have now at our fingertips, what I didn't have when I started, there's almost no reason why you can't be successful in any business you want to get in. So, you know, I'll leave this with y'all. Hashtag do the work.
That's it. Mic drop. Appreciate it, Paige. And thank you to everyone for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. If you're on audio again, please make sure you leave us a 5-star rating and review. It helps us out a lot. If you're on YouTube, make sure you like, make sure you share, make sure you subscribe. Thank you all so much. Look forward to hearing from you all soon.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue. And be sure to leave us 5 stars and a review on your favorite podcast listening platform. Until next time.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.